Welcome, welcome. This is your boy T-Mac. This is the Truth Meter Podcast, where we talk about culture, African-American culture. We talk about education, and we talk about certain different topics that affect the African-American community. I am your boy T-Mac. Quick intro for me. We're getting back to the Truth Meter Podcast. I am a educator, and I have a guest with me today. He is also an African-American educator. His name is Daniel Gibson. He is a principal. Go ahead, Mr. Gibson, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, man, thank you. I'm just glad to be here on the Truth Meter. Like you said, my name is Daniel Gibson. I don't typically do a lot of podcasts, so I'm just appreciative to be on your platform. Principal, I've been in urban education for roughly about 15 years, a little more than that. And so you just be around this community and this type of work that we do. So anytime we have a platform and I can engage in conversation with you, I'm just appreciative of it, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. And since we are educators, we are going to start this off by talking about education. And a particular topic that we want to delve into is about racism in education. And, you know, I think this is a topic that needs to be talked about, and there needs to be some solutions with our school systems, because I think sometimes that we get into, you know, a socioeconomic situation with urban schools, and things are not right. But Mr. Gibson, can you please tell us about a situation or a set of situations that we have had to deal with as African-American educators serving mostly African-American children?
Man, it is so many stories. I don't know if your audience is prepared to hear everything, and we're going to tell it the truth. This is the Truth Meter, though, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Nah, and I would never quote this man. You know, I'm a Democrat. And I'm just going to say that. So I would never walk around and quote George W. Bush. But he said something on No Child Left Behind. And he said there's this subtle bigotry of low expectations.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So that's at the heart of the racism that you'll see in black schools, is this low expectation that our kids cannot achieve. And you'll see majority, because you know, as I know, the majority of the people teaching our kids don't look like us.
Absolutely.
And so they're typically white women.
Absolutely.
And so they have this, as he talked about, this low expectation. And so when you don't believe the kids can achieve at a high level, automatically the students will not achieve, right? And so that's at the heart of everything right there. And so we see that, you know, and we could even talk about our leadership style and how they perceive us when we lead. But that's the biggest thing that I deal with, is those low expectations. So what you got?
Yeah, I mean, our kids can learn, okay? You know, and the frustrating thing about our situation, Mr. Gibson, is, you know, we have a lot of students who come from rough socioeconomic backgrounds, single-family homes. They have a lot of negative influences. Correct. And what we need in our school systems is a culture that says that, hey, any student can learn.
Right.
Any student in any situation can be saved. Right. And I think there are a lot of ancillary problems.
Correct.
That not only deal with teaching and learning, but it's outside influences. Can you explain to the audience, Mr. Gibson, about some of the issues that you have in not only urban education, but instructing our students?
Man, I got a lot of issues, if I'm honest. But the first issue that we're going to have to deal with, let's just have a quick conversation. When you think about, you know, when I think about my grandma's generation and this generation, that they were so in love with school, and school was it for them in her community. I just remember her telling me stories of her walking, you know, miles to get to school. This education thing was so important. And then I just remember her stories of all her teachers in the community and how much they valued education, and the teachers in the community just
valued. Believed. Yes.
And they believed with no questions that the kids were going to learn the material. And if the kid didn't know the material, you know, there was this connection with the family. But at the heart of it, they just believed that the kids, this was the thing that was going to save the kids. And so we don't have that anymore. You know, we have these teachers, and I'm just going to say it. We have these teachers that go home to their careers in Centerville and to the suburbs, and they come in and teach in our communities. And there is no love for our kids. There is no, I believe these kids, because what I do in the classroom will impact them, and I'm going to take this home because these kids are going to learn. We don't really have that right now. And so that's the biggest thing that that I'm dealing with when you see teachers that just teach because it's a job or whatever, and then they go home. And so we're in these communities, and we're dealing with these kids all the time. So for us, it's bigger than just, you know, making sure we work that day, right? We're really trying to make sure they get this information, they get an opportunity to get to college, they get an opportunity for a better life. And so that's this disconnect that we don't have anymore, that I wish we still had, that, you know, those stories I think about my grandma and her educational experience, you know?
So it sounds like to me that we need more teachers that kind of represent our students in urban education pockets.
And that's revolutionary for us to say that. You know, that's going to rub some feathers.
It's going to rub some feathers. And so this is what we want to do, though, Mr. Gibson, because I don't want to make, I don't want it to make it seem like there are no Anglo-Saxon or Caucasian teachers that are good. Yes. There are a lot of...
Thank you for that. Yep.
There are a lot of Caucasian teachers that do excellent work. Excellent. I know them. Yep. You know them.
Yes, yes.
You know, they care about our kids, mm-hmm. things of that nature. So we want to make sure that, you know, we put that in there.
Yeah.
But just nothing like representation.
Right.
And so part of the issues with urban education, and we're going to get to some of the racism here in a minute, but part of the issue is we were at a job fair, and and when we went to, you know, interview teachers and talk to teachers about certain opportunities
right.
in our school districts, there wasn't a lot of African American teachers. I believe that this is a major issue.
Yes.
Now, we know that only 2% of only 2% of teachers are African American males.
Correct.
At least that's the last research that we looked at.
Right.
Can you speak to, or do you have a solution in regards to it? And I do too, and I'll piggyback off you.
Okay.
How can we recruit more African-American teachers?
Right. You said something that was huge, and I don't know if your listeners got it, but I'm going to go back and I'm going to add to it. You said essentially what you got to, we're at an emergency. We don't have
absolutely
enough representation in a classroom. And so, indulge this story. I just watched March Madness women's basketball game all day. I love women's basketball. I love basketball, right? And so one thing about this country, we understand for a democracy to work, we need a strong military and we need an educated population.
Correct.
And so every commercial I saw, every time the commercials ran, there was a be all you can be Army recruitment commercial. And it had Mike Krzyzewski in it. And it had NBA players in it. And it said, what the name you put on your jersey means something. Be all you can be, Army. I say that story for this reason. We understand as a country, we have to keep recruiting people to join our military. And it is an emergency that we keep educated people joining our military.
I see where we're
going. Where I'm going?
Yeah, I see where we're going.
Yet, we have an education emergency. And what have we done? What have our politicians put in place? What incentives are we doing to tell people, I need to recruit you to come teach in the urban schools? And so when we talk about solutions, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go there. The education department, there are people who need to get involved that need to sound an alarm that this is an emergency, that our urban schools need teachers of representation and teachers to go into this field until we start to recruit like we're doing in the military until our education system, we have a problem. And I'm going to just sound the alarm as a principal right now. This is getting bad.
Absolutely. You're absolutely 110% correct. And, you know, I never thought of it in those terms. But what I would say is school districts do not do a good enough job of incentivizing recruiting minority teachers.
No.
I've talked about several times how school districts should give bonuses or incentives to African-American teachers to certain urban districts. They should give a living stipend to those particular teachers. I don't believe that this, to your point, I don't believe that this country understands the emergency that we're in regards to education. Either they don't believe that.
Right. Okay. Go ahead.
Or,
because I'm about to say.
Or, hold on. I got you. Or they don't care.
They don't care.
It's either or.
Right.
Because let me tell you something, and then we'll get back to it here in a minute. But when you have a populace, when you have a populace that is not educated.
Right.
I call it, and I forget his name, and I will, when we go to a break, I will come back and get this man's name. But he called it the cult of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have a populace that is educated, and I'm not talking about formally educated, I'm just talking about educated civically and things that we need to know and understand.
Right.
You have a cult of ignorance, and they can be led like sheep.
Yep.
Now, I'm not going to say right now, you know, that a lot of us are being led by sheep, even though I believe a lot of us are.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't have the ability to critically think.
Correct.
We don't know civically how the government works.
Correct.
We don't understand policy, all of that stuff. And that is partially because of lack of education.
Right.
And so it makes you wonder, is the government complicit in allowing our education system to fail?
Yeah.
And so that is a major concern for me.
It is. I'm going to piggyback on that, because now we're going to go back to what you talked about, racism in education, right? And so now you're talking about systemic racism. And so let's just go back to the late 90s, and I hope I don't get the case wrong, DeRolf.
DeRolf,
right, in Ohio. This is a case that ruled that it was unconstitutional on how we funded the schools.
Absolutely.
Here in Ohio.
Absolutely.
And for my listeners who don't know, the funding comes from the property value of the home. And so this is a majority of how schools get funded. And so this DeRolf case essentially said that's unconstitutional.
Yep.
You know, and so when we think about our urban schools, our poor communities, and then we right next to a suburban community when everybody owns a home and a home value is worth so much, already we're separating the two. You know, we have the haves and the have-nots. We have a school district that is not directly funded, which is going to see an impact, and then we see another school system that is very funded. And so, and then not to mention that, the government has done something else. And I'm just talking about system and how the racism thing works. And so then you put report card scores to the schools. And so essentially you say the poor schools, the schools not doing well, get this low report card score. You know, we typically get D's or C's or even F's on a report card. And so what you know about education is what we all been in school. Nobody wants a D or an F. And then so the communities where it's flourishing with a lot of money, they get A's and B's. And so if I'm new and I'm moving to a community and I see this report card score in one district that is not doing well and they have F's or D's, and then I look across the street and I see a suburb and they have A's, well, naturally, just because I've been in school all my life, I'm going to go pick the community with the A. And I'm therefore, I'm going to move in that community. And this keeps this division, right? And even in our urban schools, we have lost great families through the systemic racism of lettering these schools and not funding them. And so the students that do well, middle class, the high class, then just move out to the suburbs. And then the lower performing schools get stuck with the students and everybody else. And so that's when we start talking about systemic racism. And so that's how it rears its ugly head in this situation. And not only that,
yeah,
where did the good teachers want to go teach?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it all comes together, and this is a beast.
I first of all, I abhor the grading system that we're under here in Ohio. I think to your point, there is some sort of systemic racism with that. Mm-hmm. Because we know that research shows, and I wish I had the particular numbers, but the research shows that when you are in a lower socioeconomic household, you have more of an issue in regards to education. And this not only goes for urban school districts, this is rural school districts as well. Mm-hmm. So this is just not an urban school district issue. This is a rural school district issue.
Correct.
Some suburban school districts as well. But I just think that to say that a particular school district has an F grade, I really find that offensive, because I've worked in school districts where they had quote-unquote F grades,
right,
but you had A-plus teachers.
A-plus teachers?
You had A-plus students.
And they would out-teach those teachers at the A, so quote-unquote, A districts.
Absolutely. Or those districts. I've seen it. And so to put a broad brush or generalize a certain school district with a D and an F is absolutely apparent, in my opinion.
Yep. And I need the politicians at the state level to look at that. And then the other thing, because we're going to talk about systemic racism, and this is the other part of that, right? You give them the D or F, and then you put it in the media. And the media plays a hand. They're complicit in this situation,
yes,
right?
Yes, they
because
are.
Because any time in an urban school, there's a situation that is newsworthy. And so I work in an urban school. We had a situation last year. Two kids got in a fight. It looked bad. It ran on the news every 30 minutes on the local news.
The whole loop.
We had dogs come in our school for a drug, and they found a little marijuana. It ran on the news all day. But check this out. Also got police friends that work in a suburban district, right up one of the A-plus districts. I'm going to call the districts out. I'm tired of this playing this nice game.
Nah, for sure.
No, let's go. And so they had dogs in their school. The dogs couldn't get down the hallway. It was so many drugs in the school. The dogs got tired. There was so many drugs in the school. But the funny thing is, Mr. McKinney, that didn't hit the news at all.
That didn't hit the news. The drugs and the drugs that the dogs found in the schools didn't hit the news at all.
No. Bills in the suburb school, it didn't hit the news. I don't know how. But you got dogs that are exhausted, so many drugs in your school, it don't hit the news. But my school get a little marijuana, we're going to run it every 15, 30 minutes. And what that does, right, for a population of people when they see that imagery, we know the power. And we've used the power of imagery as a country. We understand the power of putting something in front of people and telling a narrative over and over. Even if they're smart, it seeps into the subconscious. And so this country is continuous to do those things. And that's when we talk about systemic racism. And we got to fix it, man.
We have to fix it. And, you know, we just want equitable treatment in regards to media coverage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why the majority of Americans can't stand the media anyway, because they're biased.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they cover things they want to cover. They slander people. But we won't get into that. But one of the things I wanted to broach real quick, though, Mr. Gibson, is I have a problem. We talk about racism in education. What people need to understand is education is inherently political because you have political entities funding education, the federal government, state government, local, etc.
Right.
So it's inherently political. I have a problem with this country embracing not learning history. Mm-hmm. What am I saying?
Go ahead.
I have a problem with this country not embracing African-American history. Because African-American history is American history.
Correct.
And so when you have certain governors, and I'm going to call his name, like Ron DeSantis, banning African-American books that deal with history. Let me say that again, folks. Banning African-American history books that deal with history. You're trying to erase a part of American history, because what these people don't understand is we're all in supposedly in the melting pot of America.
Right.
That is, and let me say this to all of my teachers out there. I don't care what color you are. My law professor, and Daniel, I don't know if you remember this because you were in that particular class. He said, when you become an administrator or an educator, you have to advocate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to advocate for our kids.
Correct.
Period, dot, point blank. It doesn't matter what the consequences are.
Right.
And so to see a certain segment of our country wanting to ban certain books, they don't like DEI.
Man,
they want to ban all of this stuff because they think that quote unquote minorities are getting an advantage. I could go, I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole on that.
Hey, I'm gonna go just a little bit,
but that we need to fight that.
Yeah, yeah, and you're so right. We got to be advocates, like seriously. And so, appreciate this podcast, and I hope you tag all the legislators at the state house and all those people that need to hear this conversation. And I'm gonna say this because Black history is so important. One of my favorite people I read in college was Carter G. Woodson,
bruh.
Yeah. And so we typically credit him for starting Black History Month, right?
Absolutely.
And so he writes, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, he talks about the need for African American history this month, this time to understand the history of the greats, and how the youth needed to connect with somebody they can see themselves in and inspire them to be great. And so when you take away history and you take away the greatness of our culture and you allow our youth to believe that there is no greatness, and the only thing they see in front of them is, you know, social media or what continues to be put on the TV, and they don't understand the Carter G. Woodsons and the all the historians, and we can go on and on about how great people we have as a culture. And so that's systemic as well, right?
Yeah,
we don't
absolutely
want them to understand the power that they have. When we think about, what's his name? Edgar Hoover, the FBI, who wrote from COINTELPRO, that we couldn't
he was an awful
man. We couldn't allow for a Black Messiah for them to understand that the power that they have. Like, there is greatness in an African-American culture. And sometimes the system, I think they don't want the youth to understand that. So
yeah.
It's systemic.
I absolutely agree. By the way, Carter G. Woodson, who's a bruh, I'm a part of Mega Sci-Fi, he's a bruh. The Miseducation of the Negro is an excellent book. People need to go ahead and read that.
Pick that book up.
Pick it up. But I absolutely agree with you, and I think that it's just incumbent upon us. Now, let me give you an example of the power of having a African-American teacher teach African-American students. So when I worked at a particular school, it was a high school, I was a teacher, and what we did for Black History is we did a research report, and I instructed my students to do a research project on certain African Americans, that did something,
right,
that provided for the culture, etc. Not the Michael Jordans or a rapper or MLK or Rosa Parks,
right.
You know, the ones that we all know.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
The kids, you know, are tired of that story.
And so we did, I made sure that I directed them, and I made sure that they had projects on different African American inventors,
right?
Or, you know, the Scottsboro Boys. A lot of people don't know about that right. particular story. Different stories that happened in history, so that they could then understand their history. That is the power of having, and again, we're not saying that people of other race can't do this. This Correct. Is not what we're saying.
Correct.
But that is the power of having an African-American teacher who wanted his kids to learn about their history. It is so important, because when you don't know about history, you're doomed to make the same mistakes.
Right. Correct.
Absolutely. So Correct. That is one of the reasons why I'm such an advocate of recruiting more, not only African-American teachers, but more Hispanic teachers.
Yeah.
I know in my school district, we have a large Haitian population. Whatever it is,
right.
more male teachers in general, you know, we need to be about the business of diversifying our field.
Yep. And I'm going to just, yeah, because now we're going to get to the solutions, right? And I know you want to keep this at a certain time limit. So I'm going to say this. First of all, I want to be clear. I am Daniel Gibson, a principal here in Ohio. And these are my opinions. These are not the opinions of my district. These are my thoughts and my opinions. I want to be very clear on
Absolutely.
That. You know what I mean? I want people to understand this is my mind. And so the first solution is going to come for us. First, I got to talk to my people, right? And so for us, right, I need you guys to – if you're not involved in your school and you're not on a PTO or you're not checking your kids' grades, be a part of the solution. I need you there. We need you there. And also, stop telling your kids this is not a good field. You know, we're looking at the education.
Absolutely.
And I work with universities, and we're not going in education. Well, the only people that's going to save us is us. So stop telling your kids this is not a good profession. This is actually a great profession.
Absolutely.
They can grow. They can be leadership. There's a lot of opportunity here in the education field. And so we need to go into education. And I'm going to be an advocate that we need to definitely more so go into the education field. And so this is a route to make a great career. It gives back to your community, and you will feel fulfilled. And so I just want to make sure I talk to us first. And then secondly, I want to talk to some of my policy and my lawmakers out there, and I hope that you're listening. If you sit by and do nothing, you cannot be mad when I make statements about, you know, races or bigotry. If you sit back and you don't change policy when you see it is, and I'm telling you, we're at an emergency in the urban schools, and you don't allow for incentives to come in, and you don't start to incentivize people to go into this field, and you sit back and you're complacent, and you continue to give these grades that are hurting these districts. I'm sorry. I'm going to just call a spade, and that's what it is. And so if you really want to be about helping our community, if you really want to be about, I want to see you hear it all the time. How can we help the urban community succeed? If you truly want to be about that, you go sit and talk with superintendents. You go talk with principals, and you help us with the solution that I'm putting out there, that we need more African-Americans. And as McKinney said, more Latinos. We need more black and brown going into this education field, and you incentivize it for them to go into that with tax breaks and whatever we need to do to make it lucrative for them to want to go into this field. And then also stop this report card nonsense that consistently says this district is bad and shuns it like the Scarlet Letter, right? And then the last thing is we need to be on top of the people that are reporting these stories, these news center. This is not fair. This is not equitable when you continue to put us in the media for everything negative and nothing positive, yet you don't do that to the suburban districts. It seems to me there is a system designed to ensure their stories only have positive things on the news, where ours continue this narrative that we are barbaric and
Absolutely.
Animal. And so these are the things that I'm saying to politicians, and we need to hold them accountable to what are they doing to help our education. And if they're not doing these things, we need to hold them accountable, Mr. McKinney.
Absolutely. And Mr. Gibson, what I also would say is, as a community, you know, I can't remember where I was at. I was doing a presentation for something. I can't exactly remember. I was at a church. But I said, you know, the village is broken. And if the village is broken, what are we getting from the village in regards of our kids and our students? We've got to fix the village. It's a lot that goes on with that. That's a whole nother podcast in regards to fixing the village.
Yeah.
But we have to have a, in my opinion, some sort of moral compass. Mm. We have to be more family oriented. We have to be a village to where we look, you know, we take care of each other. We don't harm each other.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be a village to where we honor thy father and thy mother. We have to be a village to where we, you know, are fine with some form of discipline. Discipline is not a bad word. It's actually good. Our kids need discipline. That doesn't mean village beating them constantly and consistently. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But one of the things that one superintendent said, and this person is forever going to remain nameless. This particular superintendent said, we had a situation where we had violence in the community. And this particular superintendent said, well, you know, that doesn't affect our schools. Well, the schools are part of the community. That is an issue. But we have to fix the village. We have to have some sort of, with our staff, cultural competency. Yeah. We have to understand the kids that we're dealing with. We have to make sure that, you know, we treat our kids with the same respect that we would treat our own kids.
Yeah.
In the suburbs or wherever. I think we have to, as a village and as a community, we have to try and fix as many of these problems as we can. Because if we're looking to certain politicians, yes, we have to advocate, and we have to advocate for great policy for education, particularly public education. That's, again, Mr. Gibson, that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
Public versus private and charter schools and how one political party has decided that they wanted to destroy public education for the last 40 years. That's a whole... That's a whole nother podcast. And also, you know, well, what you should be voting for if you work in public education. But again, I digress. So I just think that amount, you know... in regards to your solutions and some of the solutions that you put forward, I just believe that, you know, we have to fix our village.
Yeah.
And we have to, you know, mental health is very important. The mental health of our babies and our kids, people,
yeah,
is very important. I just had a situation in my district, and I don't want to speak on it, but the mental health of a child caused the murder of another person.
Yeah.
That this is awful.
Yeah.
You know, we went through the pandemic, and the pandemic, just like with anything else, affected the poor and the low socioeconomic class of people more or worse, yeah, than anybody else.
Right.
So my point is, folks, we have to fix the village. And if we get the village in order, or at least improve upon it, I think we can make some gains in what we're trying to do with our kids, student achievement, etc.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great conversation, man. I'm here for it. I appreciate you. Can I put my information out there?
Absolutely. Anybody, go ahead,
if you
man.
You want to make any comments to me, or you want any more conversation, you can find me on Twitter or X, whatever we call it now.
What is it called now?
I know. X. Twitter,
okay, whatever.
But I am at Daniel Gibson Jr. 1. I go by Principal Gibson. You can find me on Twitter X 1. I'm at Daniel Gibson Jr. 1.
Absolutely. And this is the Truth Meter podcast. You know, you can find me on Facebook. You know, I changed my name because, you know, the students, they tend to want to, you know, find me and things of that nature. But you all can find me at Paul Kenny on Facebook, The Truth Meter on Twitter, X, whatever that's called. I don't know what that is, man. Hey, Elon Musk, man, if you hear us, You know what I'm saying? You change that back to Twitter, man, because this whole X thing, I don't even know what you call. Like, we used to say tweet and tweeting, and now, what is it, Xing? Like, I don't know. I mean, whatever. Anyway.
I'm going to X you.
Yeah.
Look,
and
look, that don't sound right.
That just doesn't sound right. So anyway, you can find me on that platform. I'm Kenny Jr. on Instagram. I'm going to be posting this podcast on all my platforms. And I really, Mr. Gibson.
Let's go.
I really do appreciate you, sir.
Yes, yes.
We have to do this again because we have a lot of issues in education that we, you know, we're fighting every day.
Yep.
And I want to make sure that our voices get heard.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Lastly, do you have anything else to plug? Anything else you want to say to the audience?
Nothing else to plug. I just want to tell the politicians, I'm coming for you. Lawmakers, I am a true advocate of public school education. And you get ready to see my face and get ready to see me a lot. I am coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to piggyback on that, and I want to say we're going to do more podcasts on education, advocating for our community, advocating for our students, advocating for the truth. This is why I named my podcast The Truth Meter. And so I want to go ahead and sign out. This is T-Mac, also known as Timothy McKinney. This is The Truth Meter Podcast. God bless everyone. You all have a beautiful and wonderful day.